Snoochie Boochies. Snoochie Boochies.
Snoochie Boochies. A pretty controversial way to open this episode, given a certain character bemoans that being associated with them in today's movie. Just saying.
That's right. What kind of idiot says stupid shit like Snoochie Boochies?
It's baby talk.
It's baby talk.
Hey, it's baby talk.
It's baby talk. The only podcast for babies by babies. I'm your baby host, JZT.
I'm sorry, I thought that riff was going to go longer. I'm Goo Goo Gaga. I'm your baby host, Fesh.
And we're babies. As a baby, I'm often looking for milk. I'm often confused by objects that disappear, and then they come back.
Hi. We're not alone, but also that's not the podcast.
No. Folks, we'll do a clean slate. Star wipe. Hello, and welcome to View.
Skew.
Bless you. A comprehensive podcast chronicling and blunt manning the films of Kevin Smith. I'm JZT.
And I'm Fesh, and we're not alone.
No, we're joined by a wonderful guest today. A friend I've known for many years. She's an actor. She's been on HBO. It's Angela Dahl.
Hi, guys.
Hello. Hi. Angela.
This movie might be for babies by babies, but I have written down four confused men by confused men.
There you have it. Yeah, there it up. You have
it. Today we are talking Chasing Amy, the third film Kevin Smith made in the year 1997. In the year 1997. Radiohead's OK Computer will come out. In the year 1997. Any riffs on that, guys?
You can really tell it's 1997 by the voluminous jeans on all of the male characters.
They are swimming in them.
You could make a sail from one pant leg on Ben Affleck's pair of pants.
Now, this does beg the question, Fesh, mm-hmm. Are we going to have to do a whole episode dedicated to the photo of Kevin Smith in jean shorts?
I was going to ask you if we were going to do a whole episode on the tweet, and it would just be called The Tweet.
Do you know about The Tweet, Angela?
Is it a taint tweet?
His wife?
Yeah. It's a taint tweet.
Yeah, it's a taint tweet.
Yes, I'm familiar with the tweet.
Although, you know, to really just narrow it down to a taint tweet there's so much in the tweet, you know. What I'm trying to say, in my opinion, it's not just a taint tweet. It's also a marriage tweet. Mm-hmm. It's a dry hump tweet.
Dry humping being a part of it.
I'm thinking of the story.
Baby shoes never worn.
Yes.
Fiction world building.
I'm thinking of a story he tells in an evening of Kevin Smith of dry humping his wife for the first time.
Mm. A lot of content under the Kevin Smith umbrella. A lot of content.
And we're going to cover each and every story the man has ever told. That's right. The movies are just the beginning. We will break down every episode of every podcast he's ever done.
When was the Clerks animated series? Because that factors into this episode, I feel like.
Oh, does it now?
God,
well, because the crux of the male friendship here is about getting their animated series off the ground.
I think that was after. I feel like...
Interesting.
I'll Google it.
I completely forgot that there was a Clerks animated series.
Yeah, and it was, I think, 12 episodes, right? Probably only some of them aired, but...
Ooh. Yeah, I think only a couple aired. It was aired in May of 2000.
Oh, well, in the year 2000.
In the year 2000. In the year 2000.
It was just May?
May to June. Right. 6 episodes. Yes. Only 2 episodes are broadcast on ABC before the series was canceled. Due to low ratings, the show not fitting in with ABC's other programming,
yeah.
Unsuccessful test screening to older audiences, uh-huh. And ABC's decision to air the shows out of order. They
the
aired the
two
fourth
episodes out of order.
Oh, God.
They aired the 2 episodes.
Whoa. 0% success rate with the chronology.
So the reason I ask about the timeline there is I'm wondering if that's already kind of percolating, if like they have it, they haven't shopped it around yet, or if life imitated art.
Who's to say? Who knows? Yeah. Yes. Okay. We do our research on this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
They first had the idea for the series in 1995. They said this in an audio commentary. In that same commentary, Scott Mosier, the producer, claimed that they pitched the series to every network, including HBO, Fox, the WB, and several others.
See, it fits with the WB to me.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it should have been on the WB, not ABC.
They were given a 13-episode order from UPN, but they turned the offer down in order to be on a bigger channel like ABC, having been told that UPN would be off the air within a year. Hey, were you guys fans of UPN?
Yeah.
UPN was UPN brought back Buffy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. There was a show I watched about Nikki. Was it just called Nikki? A redheaded lady who was a dancer and she marries a professional wrestler and they moved to Las Vegas. I watched every episode. I was a big old fan. I was 8 years
old.
It was really funny. The wrestler guy, he like had this whole idea. He's like, he pitched it. He's like, I want to be like the American hero or the hammer of justice. And then the promoter's like, I think you're going to be the crybaby. You're going to wear a diaper and you're going to cry in the ring. And he was like defeated. But then Nikki's like, hey, a gig's a gig.
Now, was this multicam, single cam?
Multicam, yeah. And she was a dancer in Vegas too. And so there was often like, I think every episode would open with a dance number and they were pretty funny.
Ooh.
Funny dance numbers to start off the show on UPN.
Because she worked at like a shitty strip club or dance review, and so I just remember there was one set to It's Raining Men. They had a lot of like inflatable men dolls falling from the rafters, and
they had a sense
pretty
of-
pretty good.
So yes, so Chasing Amy. This is a movie, guys.
Angela, before we get to that, your relationship to Kevin Smith and the View Askew universe and any of and all of that.
John and I briefly talked about this, but I think we had the same, like, middle school experience of, like, watching a Kevin Smith movie and, like, being like, this guy who mocks everyone and never shuts up is awesome. Like, really wondering about how awesome that guy really was once years had passed. I've seen like all of them. I remember watching Dogma with my dad a lot and him being like curiously into like the religion bashing. And I was like, I've never been inside a church. Like, I don't know why you're taking this so personally.
Oh, was your dad religious?
No. I think he like went to church as a child, but he was like a 40-year-old man at this point. I was like, let it go.
Well, got to say it's a hard thing for Catholics to, a lot of people being raised Catholic. I don't know if your father was Catholic, but
he was not. He was
okay, well then. Well, yeah, then I don't know, cuz it comes up a lot in Kevin Smith's work, Catholicism and being raised Catholic, and clearly he hasn't been able to let it go. He went and made the movie Dogma, for instance. I can't speak to why somebody who has been to a Lutheran church in a long time would appreciate that work.
Really couldn't say.
We'll have to add that to our mystery file, Fesh.
Yeah.
Fesh and I have made a comprehensive file indexing all the mysteries of the world.
Of the whole world?
Mm-hmm, yeah. That's right. If we hear about a mystery, we put it in the file.
And is it alphabetical?
It's chronological. Sort of, yeah, chronological. Yeah. Because we're trying
when
to
we think of it. Chronological mm-hmm, yeah. of when we decide to put it into the that's file.
Right. So this isn't. These mysteries might not get solved.
I would say most definitely won't, but no. We'll see.
It's the system that works for us, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's the journey that's important.
Because where we were when we thought of the mystery is so crucial to our process, because there's context clues, like what in our environment is triggering us to remember this, to think on this, to see this, you know. So many of my mystery discoveries are grocery stores.
I was going to say, it's mostly grocery stores in the list, so mm-hmm. it's not really going to...
I'm waiting in line. I'm looking at tortillas. I go, hey now.
Wait, your grocery store has tortillas in the impulse part?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, cool.
They're trying to get you. They're like, tortillas? Did you forget tortillas? Because yeah. everyone forgets tortillas.
Yeah.
What a bullshit statement. Anyway, we're talking Chasing Amy, which I got. I think I was teeing it off. I'd like to open the floor with my State of the Union on Chasing Amy. This was my favorite movie in middle school of mm-hmm. Kevin Smith's. I saw it. I loved it. I saw it multiple times. I'm sure I cried multiple times. Mm-hmm. Last time I saw it, maybe college. So, you know, going on long ago. I think in the second or first episode of this podcast, I teed up like, boy, you know, we might rewatch it again and it might be problematic or flawed, but I'm sure I'll love it and defend it. Not the case. I was watching. I think Holden McNeil is an emotional terrorist. This guy sucks. That was my takeaway. Now, you know, that's a little with caveats and whatever, but you sure. know. How's everyone else's gut checks on this?
I had only seen it the one time beforehand, but I do remember my thought process being that it was the best one as well. And I think all that meant was it's like the one striving for a little bit of maturity.
Yeah.
And I think that's still, you know, good and still admirable. I do think a little bit, just like I said about Brody in the Mallrats episode, I do think Holden is supposed to be more, like, looked down upon than I initially thought. Maybe not enough, but I don't think we're supposed to be totally cheering him on at the same time. Again, it might just be an Eye of the Beholder thing, but I think with Silent Bob's speech, you kind of see that Kevin is just saying, like, hey, don't be like this.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
So... Does that justify all the things? I don't know. But, yeah.
Angela, what's your gut check?
Yeah, I was nervous to watch this again. I think I watched it once as an adult, but I think it was on a Sunday when I, like, fell asleep a lot during it. Like, I was tired. So this is the first time that I have watched it for real as an adult. And I guess I was, like, I, too... thought that there would be more of like a unchecked sympathy for Holden, and it was like, I mean, it really avoided a pitfall by being condemning his basically everything he does. I mean, he's like, he dresses like, he looks like a divorced dad. Just like so bad. And then everything that he says, basically, you're just like, why would you think that? But then why would you say it to another person also? And but I kind of love Joey Lauren Adams. Like,
yeah.
I would totally fall in love with her, too. She was terrific. And I mean, no acting required when she just has, like, the face of the most what the fuck reaction to like everything Ben.
Yes. I mean, she gets a little tight cast in this decade of like, oh great, that will just make you put you in that position, and that will counteract Pauly Shore, that'll counteract Adam Sandler, that will counteract there was one more, I can't think of who it was, but yeah, it's unfair. I feel like she is a shadow to the Peter Panism that this is radiating from all of this stuff. But
just a human basketball backstop.
Yeah.
Backboard? Is backstop baseball?
I don't know what a backstop is, Angela.
But backboard is definitely basketball.
Backboard, yes. That guy had some... He really fumbled a couple of things.
I would say so.
Continuing sports metaphor. No slam dunks.
Well, so I think, so the first time I saw this, I was probably like 15. And I remember, again, you know, when you have an opinion and a memory and you just don't return to it. And so you just assume it's the same. And you're like, yeah, the hockey scene in Chasing Amy is the most, you know, nuanced and potent metaphor there is. Because when I saw it when I was 15. And I remember it being awesome at the time. And then you watch it, and it's like, I don't think it's bad, but it's just like, yeah, we've seen a million things like this before. This isn't groundbreaking, but it might have been the first of that I had seen. Just speaking of sports metaphor.
Mm-hmm. It was truly a wonderful single entendre. How she yells, "I blew him," and then the hockey guy gets punched in the face. Just like how he feels. Whoa. Incredible.
The symbolism is just too much.
It's striking.
And so we open. Should we start from the beginning or how?
Comic book panels. Once again, a motif I'm finding here amongst
this
the
guy,
auteurs.
Kevin, yes.
He's a comic book guy.
We open on a comic book panel. Comic book people are browsing around. Mike Allred, the creator of Mad Men, who did some of the drawings in this movie, is seen getting asked, like, what do you think about Chow Yun-Fat for Mad Men? And that's pretty fun. And then at that
point in time, the Manhattan Comic Con took place in the basement hotel ballroom of Fort Hilton, it looks like.
Well, it's one like thing to note, I believe a fun backstory for this movie is Kevin Smith wrote the script. He took it to a studio. Someone in charge said, "We like it a lot. Who are you thinking of casting?" He's like, "Oh, I'd like to cast Jason Lee and Joey Lauren Adams and Ben Affleck." And they said, "Oh, we were thinking John Stewart, Breckenmeyer, and Drew Barrymore." And Kevin Smith lost his mind over this. He was furious. He's like, "Fuck no." And I believe they said, "Well, what do you think? Well, you can't just go make friends with your movies with your friends, Kevin." And he said, "Why not?" And you know, it's an interesting I think then the budget went from like that would have been like $5 million or something, you know, reasonable. And then as a result, he made this movie for $250,000. Which pissed Scott Mosier, the producer, off because it was not a lot of money.
No.
And I believe he specifically... Oh, what's up?
What's the Cassavetes cutoff? Is it $100,000?
Oh, I don't... What's this Cassavetes cutoff?
The Cassavetes Award at American Independent Spirit is $100,000 or less. So maybe...
Kevin, just like a lot of things, he occupies a space in between both worlds.
Yeah.
Not quite Cassavetes.
Yeah, not quite studio, not quite smart, not quite. Yeah. You know, it's. Yeah.
It also just feels like, I don't know, I guess on some level you wonder if it's that big of a movie with Drew Barrymore, who's pretty famous at the time, like how much of the script then gets changed, you know? And like, does it get like sanded off or changed and not as what it is, you know? And is that a good or bad thing? Who's to say? But you know,
yeah, I can't see them talking about Drew Barrymore doing a teenage Eiffel Tower afternoon.
Yeah.
So it, Breckenmeyer would be Banky, and then
I would assume, yeah.
John Stewart would be Holden. You know, I think Jason Lee does a lot of the actor will justify kind of stuff where it's like these, again, we've talked about it a bunch. These lines are horrendous, sometimes content wise, but sometimes written wise, and sometimes both. but just the way he delivers those lines, like, oh, I know that guy. I totally believe that that guy totally believes what he is saying, or is well, not projecting, but, you know, he's lying to himself, and he's doing a good job of convincing himself that he believes those things. And I don't know. I love Breckenmeyer as much as the next guy. I don't think he'd be able to pull off the role of Mickey in the same way.
Yeah, agreed. Jason Lee actually was very good in this, I thought.
I think so too.
Yeah.
I mean, he was given like ankle weights in the pool with a lot of this dialogue, but he made it work.
I do like in the opening scene, which talk about misguided, weird in between stuff, but where they're interviewing or they're accosting a black comic book writer with some classic shitty white dude questions when it comes to the topic of diversity. But the way that they're delivering it is like they've been through this 100 times before. The way that Jason asks questions like, what's a Nubian? Like, I don't know. There's a bounciness to it that it's like he's the character is getting a kick out of getting to be this shitty.
Mm-hmm. He has layers to his shittiness.
Exactly.
Let's talk about that scene too. I feel like that, in the words of 30 Rock, was too confusing to be racist.
So it's a scene where it's at a comic book convention, but specifically it's a diversity panel, and you know there's some queer people. We don't really hear from many of them, but mostly Hooper X, a black comic book writer, is talking about his new book, White Hatin' Coon, and then he gets interrupted, and yeah, it's very confusing because later then, Jason Lee says,
okay,
what's
so they ask him a bunch of questions that frustrate him. He's wearing, we don't know this at the time, but he's wearing the veneer of a pretty militant, you know, black activist, and he is pushed within the sub narrative that they've created here too far, pulls out a gun and shoots Banky. And we are 4 minutes into this movie.
Yeah.
And then he starts
I think he starts screaming black power or
black rage.
Black rage. And then shortly thereafter, Jason Lee gets up. He's fine. Everyone's gone. They say, like, oh, man. Hey, why'd you say that Nubian joke? I almost shit myself. And then Jason Lee's like, I didn't know you were going to say black rage. I was pissing myself. You know. And Holden McNeil, our hero, Ben Affleck, says, you're in just too many words, like, your comic book publisher endorses this? And then... find out Hooper X is gay.
The comic book people clear it with the local authorities.
They say, hey, just so you know, this comic book person is going to shoot somebody, but they're blanks, and it's okay. Now, we just want...
She addresses this, but could you imagine being somebody else asked to do this panel? And it's like, well, there it goes. I can't speak to anything because Hoover X is doing his old shoot somebody gimmick.
The old shoot someone in a room with one exit and no fire door.
Yeah, you mentioned that Comic-Con looks like it's in the basement. It's like so strategically shot that it's just a corner of a basement.
Yep.
It's like, if you zoomed out at all, it's like, oh, no, it's not. Nope.
And then we meet Alyssa Jones, our hero, the villain. What are we supposed to think?
I don't think it's purported that she's
no.
at all. But
she is the hero. She's cool.
She's neither a hero nor a villain. That's what we learned
kind of the point
of the story.
Yeah.
Just a regular woman.
Just a regular woman who Holden instantly is crushing on. They all hang out. They go to a bar. Hooper and Banksy have an argument about Archie being gay. They go buy some comic books to try and get to the bottom of this. Holden and Alyssa. Thoughts, Fesh?
No, I think, again, content-wise, it's silly, but it does ring true to those kind of stupid conversations at a bar at 3 a.m. And when it's like, why are you taking this argument so seriously? To the point that I think Hooper is, like, fucking with Banky because he's getting so mad about it. And to the point he's like, let's go buy comics and I will prove to you empirically that this fictional character's sexual orientation shouldn't make me feel uncomfortable. Like, I feel... Maybe the landing isn't stuck, but the intentions of it are something. At first, it doesn't feel that way. At first, it feels just like shocking homophobic teenage boy humor, for sure. But when you see what the themes of the movie become, which did not stick in my memory. The last third of this movie felt like I was watching for the first time again, because I did not remember where this goes. Which is to say, I'm still walking around going, oh, it's about Ben Affleck falling in love with a lesbian. And I'm not going to police anybody's identity, but that premise kind of shifts away to be like, no, he's uncomfortable with just the sexual past of his partner, which is more important than what about her orientation, which is whatever. But like, I don't know. There's something about like it's a hook. That's a clean hook of falling over a lesbian. Can I sustain that for a whole movie? No. So we're going to change it. And what can you do?
Yeah, there's some emotional twists and turns. And everyone is smoking indoors the entire movie. I didn't see an ashtray in 50% of the scenes. Everything is covered in ash.
Yeah, you spoke to the fashion earlier. It does feel like if something were to ironically, like, we were going to do a flashback to 1997. What would the parody version of it be? Is everybody smoking? Has a Van Dyke facial hair and has a big cappuccino and, you know.
Wait, guys, is that what facial hair I have right now?
Sort of.
Sort of.
I don't know. It's not.
No, yours connects. Yours connects.
Yeah, it can. Yeah, I don't. I got. Well,
it's you have a chin strap.
I just have a wispy itch. Chin strap. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not paired with like a sideburn heavy pompadour.
Right. Either way, it doesn't read as I've watched Swingers too many times.
All right.
You know what? There is a Mighty Mighty Bosstown song in Chasing
First Amy. Needle Drop. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I. It all makes sense.
I heard that and said, oh, Fesh is going to love this movie.
Absolutely. Now, if you really, just side note, if anybody really wants a 1997 movie with a nice solid ska soundtrack, check out Father's Day starring Billy Crystal and Robin Williams. Wall to wall ska on that soundtrack.
Really?
Wow. It's weird. Like deep cut, Real Big Fish tracks. It's strange. But yeah. But also, it ends with them going to a Sugar Ray concert. I can't make heads or tails of it. This isn't a Father's Day episode. I'm sorry, everybody.
Yeah.
There's an interesting amount of ska in Clueless, too.
The Mighty Mighty Bosstones themselves are in Clueless. They're the band.
Yeah, and I think there's a Cherry Pop and Daddy's song, too.
Yeah.
Just want to take a little detour.
Folks, you got to listen to ska.
So there's also a nice walk and talk in a record shop that I was really enjoying in this one.
That's a fun one, yeah.
I forget what is said. when Hooper basically explains that Banky loves Holden.
Yes. It's towards the end, like Holden and Alyssa, they're dating, but there's tension. It's rough. Holden doesn't know what to do. He hangs out with Hooper. They talk about a lot of, you know, and because really Hooper exists to like, help be, you know, be
you
there.
He just kind of floats in to magically explain the world to our white characters. Interesting.
Yes.
I wonder if there's a name for that.
uh, but also gay stuff, you know? He is like, I'm here to teach you about gay stuff and gay culture, you know, and yeah. Well, but yeah, it's a nice little scene, and I like the part where a little boy shows up and he switches into Hooper X mode, points at Ben Affleck and says, "You see him? He's the enemy."
That he's not fun. Wrong.
But yeah, so basically that whole veneer is there to that's how he can get ahead in the business, because while he's still struggling with plenty as an African American, he's also a gay man, and that's a whole other can of worms there. All stuff Kevin just shouldn't be dealing with.
Yeah, Kevin is like trying to get into Bell Hooks territory, and he is struggling.
Yeah, it's
Are you guys saying this movie isn't nuanced?
Well, yes, I am saying that. But but one thing, at least when it comes to queer-related issues through a straight man's lens, which is not necessarily something that needs to be tackled, but I think why when I was 15 I saw it and I thought it was so mature and so progressive is I was seeing it at a time where, like, The Hangover was around. where, you know, a certain doctor was paged very early in that movie. And it's when that was like the base reality to see something that is even though it's dropping a lot of the other F word all over the place, it's dissecting it and it's trying to see why and how we can move past that, as opposed to just saying, oh, it's the base reality that the bankies run the world and that's okay. And like, and it, especially for 1997, which is super faint praise, that it doesn't necessarily justify a bunch of stuff, but it's a little bit of whataboutism there. But I just mean to say, like, besides this and I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry, what's a studio movie that has addressed this at all? Like,
yeah, it's a definite step in the road for sure.
Exactly. That's what I mean to say. Yes. Yeah. Step in the road. Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, where would we be without Pronounce You Chuck and Larry?
Well, you know, yeah. I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry had to walk so bros could run.
I was going to say bros is the new thing. But again, so Chasing Amy, 1997. I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry, 2007. Bros, 2022. Like, you know, just the step. You would think there'd be more steps. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, I do give it credit for just being like, hey, maybe like hate isn't the best. Like, we can definitely try like dipshittery around this instead of outright hate.
Yeah.
That's right. Fesh nailed it. Angela nailed it.
Thanks, JZT. Mm-hmm.
You know what else I actually... are we still going to go like pretty chronologically?
We can float around. You have some... Or go where you want to go, Angela.
I actually do. I have a thing that I really liked in this movie. There's the scene where they're in the car in the rain and Ben Affleck parks the car and uses like way too many sentences to tell Alyssa that he is in love with her. I mean, like, there's so much fat that could be trimmed in just like every single scene. It's so verbose, and there's so much restatement of like the same thing, and that was all bad, but this is good. It actually, he says, I like who I am because of our relationship. And to me, that was like rang like a really true point about you do become someone else a little bit when you fall in love with someone. And I feel like that's not a topic that is like in the wheelhouse of like movies about relationships a lot of the time.
Absolutely. And that's, I think if we talk about the Drew Barrymore, Breckin Meyers, John Stewart version of it, that may not be the intention to throw some of that stuff out in the same way they would say lose the Archie gay argument or stuff like that. But like when you get somebody in to trim the fat, yeah, you might lose some good fats as well. And it's this whole, again, this whole endeavor, this whole podcast is exploring this weird kaleidoscope that is this career of like really genuinely interesting things lost in a sea of, you know, weed smoke and dorm room posters. But also he's very aware of it at the same time. I'm gonna jump ahead here, but Jay and Silent Bob's speeches respectively that I alluded to early are, they're like the characters, one of their speeches, the writer and director saying, hey, here's the thesis statement of the movie, this is why it's called that. Here's how my dialogue is supposed to be delivered to sound somewhat natural. The other one, Jay, is like, hey, don't flanderize our characters, which is like a weird thing to include. Like all of his universe world building stuff is its own thing. But Jay being like, you've turned us into caricatures and that sucks, I don't like that. On the third movie, 10 of those characters. In the sea, I don't know. I bring it up to say it's in the journey that we're taking with this. I think the
my cat's attacking me. Get off of me.
Uh oh.
Okay, I'm so sorry.
The routine kind of comes, the dance kind of comes with Kevin is, all right, I'm gonna take a risk, a leap. Oh, that didn't work. Do you guys want Jay and Silent Bob again? And I think this movie is weirdly both at the same time. And then he's got to do Dogma, which is, again, an attempt at maturity. Maybe not successful when it comes to that, but he's trying to take on bigger things. Jay and Silent Bob are also here. And then whenever he tries to not include them at all and just escape the VS universe, the next one he does is Strikes Back and Reboot and Clerks 2 and so I do think, I don't know, that scene is so interesting to me that it's those two elements of his universe talking to one another, and the more mature ones are Jay and Silent Bob. I don't know.
There's something interesting too about it, because again, like, they show up and you're supposed to think, oh, these two idiots are here, like, two stoner drug dealers. They're getting money because somehow they like figured out they have likeness rights, you know? And it's just, you're supposed to be like, oh, great. This guy's bad day can't get any worse. He has to hear what these two dummies have to say. And they really do like shift his perspective. Like one of them, yeah, is like being like, hey, man, why did you just assume I don't know anything about law? Why are you, you know, you think I'm an idiot, don't you? You know? And the other one fully enlightens him on like what his problem is, you know? And which, again, it's just Kevin Smith in a nutshell being like, see, I'm smart. You think I'm just the stupid guy, but
yeah.
I got heart, darn it.
Well, and while this movie is not a masterclass on feminism, it was really the right choice. He never makes Alyssa apologize for anything that she's done, nor does he intimate that if she did, things would go better for her.
Right.
And during Silent Bob's little speech, he kind of explicitly states, I was acting like I was mad at her. I called her a slut, which was a word people used a lot in the 90s. But he
in
was
a
like,
derogatory.
But he did say, I was really just afraid. And it's stupid guy bullshit. No offense, dudes. But it's like,
hey, you can't say that. Hey.
Whoa, we're going to have to cut that out.
No. The most offensive thing you can say to a man is that he's a stupid guy. No, yeah, that's, I guess that's why my instinct is to sort of defend it, is because I don't know that Kevin is even, again, purporting for it to be a masterclass in feminism. He's just there going, I don't know. This is my experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it is still very ironic that this opens on our diversity panel. And it's like, but listen to my experience about this.
Yeah.
And I don't know if, I think his self-awareness does fall short of those little ironies sometimes. That said, for what it is, and that we can only talk about it for what it is, yeah, there are little bits in there that it's like, okay, that's good call, Kevin. Good move there, especially when you put in the over the filter of 1997, you know, dude, stupid guy movie.
And sometimes what? The best way to write about a problem is to actually walk through your thought process in real time about it, which is kind of what he's doing.
Yeah.
The thing I really like picked up on this time around is after he like confesses his Ben Affleck confesses his love to Alyssa in the car and she leaves and then he follows her and she's kind of, you know, responds in the rain. And her big thing is like, well, maybe it's this or maybe it's later. But you know, her thing is like, yeah, if this were to work out, if we dated, like nothing changes for you. I'm just the next girl you're dating. For me to date you, like, it changes my whole world, you know? Like, that's not just an easy thing for me. Like, it almost, you know, like, all my, it just is such a bigger deal. You know, it's just being like, hey, man, you're really, it's, like, not totally fair of you to just assume this is, I can just snap in. Or, like, oh, there's an adjustment period, and I'll get used to it. Like,
which I think is why the misguided invitation for the threesome is him being, see, like, I can restore balance, but if I do it too, then it's not about her lived experience and how, you know, how she's grown as a person. It's about the list of things that she has done.
Yes, yeah,
in
yeah.
his mind, you know.
Yeah, he's still in that mode of like, well, you did it with someone else, and you're like, she did an activity she wanted to do at an earlier point with a different person, and that, how do you see that that's not the same as doing right. something she would really not enjoy now?
yeah.
And I liked her very practical list of reasons as to why. It's like, all right, if this happens in it, you're going to freak out. If this happens in it, you're going to freak out. It's like,
and like, I couldn't help but notice that he just blew right past Banky being the third in this three-way, who has never been anything but shitty to her. I think you're gonna love his dick. I really think that's gonna be nice for you.
A character who's just written as like, just like the worst energy. Like, why would you want to sleep with this guy? Well, you know, he's someone I know.
Yeah.
I think it's a failing of the movie. I don't know if it's the writing or directing or everything or what, but like, I think they really want you to think that Banky's in the closet, and I just don't believe it. Or, you know, I get what he's going for, but I just don't think it rings totally true. And
I also think. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No. Go ahead.
Well, I think that was very of a time to be like, you know what homophobia really means is that you want it bad from a guy.
Yeah. Which is like a form of homophobia in its own right. It's like, oh, look at you. You're gay. You're just calling a character gay again.
You gay idiot. Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's some kind of a possessive platonic love going on there.
Which I think is, again, very interesting and is not like a thing tackled in traditional mainstream movies all that often, of especially from a male perspective, of two males, one being super possessive of it. The other thing I like is, yeah, he is super abrasive, but sometimes it's like, yeah, but we've known each other since third grade. That's it. And it's never, I'm never going to not be his friend because we both live here. And that's how it goes.
Yeah,
until, of course. Sorry, go ahead.
No, they both live in the same apartment and then work there all day. And, like, when they go anyplace, they go together. That's a really weird relationship. And when it was pointed out that it was weird, I'm like, how did it take us so long to notice that this is like extremely bizarre?
And I feel like they're taking public transit anyway. So when they're like, we gotta go, let's go. It's like
Banky has a car. Banky has a car.
Oh, he does. He does. Okay.
Yes, because people put a dent in it with their riding.
That's right.
I do. I think I do still really like the scene where, you know, after Alyssa and Holden hook up and then Banky sees them and then Banky and Holden. Banksy? Why am I saying Banksy?
Banksy's a guy. Because
of the famous street artist.
That's right. Oh, exit through the gift shop. Am I right?
Dude, you're so right.
You always got to exit through the gift shop. They're talking on the stoop, you know, and Banky, he tries to deflect by talking about Catholic schoolgirls as a joke, you know. But then I think, like, this, the heart-to-heart they have is really sweet, I think, you know. And it's kind of a nice deflection because I think you would assume he would, like, scream at him or yell at him, like, what the fuck, man? But it's so, like, you know, he's like, what's done is done. This is happening. He's like, hey, man, like, I'm not trying to be a dick. Like, I just don't think this is going to work out for you, and I care about you as a friend, you know. And it's sweet, you know.
And, yeah, that nuance is somewhat unexpected, even though, like, these are all themes. This is only the third movie, but these are all themes that have been in all of them, mm-hmm. of like the weird reactions of wounded, stupid men dealing with their emotions, as well as like you hit on it in our last episode really hard. This one's the urtext for this, but of men being afraid of having less experience than who they're with. That's in all of the movies so far. This one's about it. Mm-hmm. Rather than it just being something in it. Completely off topic now, I'm going to jump to the universe world building stuff I alluded to earlier. When you see the things in Clerks, they suck. They really suck. And I'm not saying they don't suck in this, but when they're talking about them at the bar, which is my friend fucked a dead guy in a bathroom there, and then that girl drowned in the YMCA. Not saying they don't suck, but it does sound like two people from Jersey having a conversation. Yeah. So just for, you know, I will also give him credit that a lot of world building stuff can stop things dead in their tracks. You're like, okay, we got to explain how this thing's connected to that thing. And all right, it's like these specifics are throwaway, and if this is the only Kevin Smith movie you've seen, you wouldn't be like, wait, what is that? Who is that? It's just there. Mm. And I appreciate, and I think as a comic book guy, you get those little panels that have asterisks next to them and say, read, you know, Black Panther 25 to understand what happened here. I think that's what he's more so trying to do.
I did also notice when Jay and Silent Bob left the diner, it was to catch a bus to Chicago, which I believe is where we meet them in Dogma.
Hey.
So we got little threads all over the place.
That's fun.
And it's fun throwaway, whereas now the trailer for any franchisey movie comes out, and here's a 44-minute breakdown of each Easter egg in the trailer for the thing. And it's like, ugh. It doesn't seem like the card is leading the horse here, I guess. It seems like it's extra sauce that he's putting on it. Mixed metaphors.
Yeah, it seems like people just are living their lives and people who know them are aware of it.
Right. And I, having not returned to this in a while, I assumed that Jason Lee was just playing Brody again in this movie. I was like, all right, let's see. And he's not that different. Now, the T-shirt in Mallrats was an amalgamation of everybody who auditioned to be Brody in that movie. His first T-shirt in here looked like an ink-blotted version of the Clerks poster. JZT, do you have any information on this?
Say it again. Huh?
The T-shirt that Banky is wearing in the first scene, it's in a similar art style as Brody's in Mallrats, but it's of like it looks like the Clerks poster.
Oh.
Do you have any information on this? It's okay if you don't. You just brought I don't at the moment.
Okay. I will have to dig into it.
No, you don't have to. I just, if you had something ready to go.
Now, one thing I think I am teeing up. Are we ready to do a Kobayashi Maru fesh?
Yes. Now, here's the problem with this segment is now it makes me watch the movies differently. I'm looking out for it and wondering what it's going to be. And this one is, there's far too many. The Kobayashi Maru on this podcast, we're stealing, we're cribbing, we're making pop culture reference. to Star Trek, which is about Captain Kirk has to take a test, and it's an impossible test. For Kevin Smith movies, we think the impossible test is reading certain lines of dialogue. How could any actor successfully read this line of dialogue? So on this podcast,
and you can't.
We all got to go around. This is a long one, but all right.
This is a long one. This is a harder one. And I got to say, this is Joey Lauren Adams nails it, I think. So she kind of does. There were some bad Ben Affleck monologues I could have chosen, but I figured this was a fun one. Because, yeah. And so I'll. Does anyone want to start? We got a real actor. You know, Angela, you're a real actor.
I'm a real actor.
But again, this is an impossible challenge. So don't feel. Don't be hard on yourself if you don't succeed. Because
I'm gonna go
you
for
have
it
to...
for real. I'm not gonna half-ass it. Okay.
Okay. Great.
Yeah, Holden, it's true. In fact, everything you heard or dug up on me is probably true. Yeah, I took on two guys at once. You want to hear some gems you might not have unearthed? I took a 26-year-old guy to my senior prom, and I left halfway through to have sex with him and Gwen Turner in the backseat of a limo. Or how about in college when I let Shannon Hamilton videotape us having sex only to find out the next day he broadcast it on the campus cable station? They're all true, Holden. Didn't you know? I am the queen of suburban legend.
Very good.
He's so proud of himself. I am the queen of suburban legend. He might as well have a chef kiss emoji next to it. But that was great. The great thank you, Angela. The great job there.
Oh my god. You know what? He's one of those guys that like will just forget about contractions too sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, Ben Affleck at one point says, "What?" Fuck, I should have written it down. It was something like, why have we never encountered each other? Like something that was just completely like, no, just 20 something dude from Jersey would phrase it that cleanly.
Yeah.
Why have we never encountered? Yeah. Ugh.
Yeah. It's very right. Like person reading a handwritten letter out loud.
All right. Can I take a stab at this, Fesh?
Absolutely.
And I want to just say from a performance perspective, Angela, I like how you chose to not cry, not be sobbing like Joey did. I think your choice was very good, you know.
Well, I have a time crunch here.
All right, yeah. We didn't give you 20 minutes to go work yourself up into a frenzy to cry, right?
Get the cat back and she can dig her claws into me more in the cardigan.
Yes, use it, yes. Okay, all right, here I go. Yeah, Holden, it's true. In fact, everything you heard or dug up on me is probably true. Yeah, I took two guys at once. You want to hear some gems you might not have unearthed? I took a 26-year-old guy to my senior prom and left halfway through to have sex with him and Gwen Turner in the backseat of a limo. Or how about in college when I let Shannon Hamilton videotape us having sex, only to find out the next day he broadcast it on the campus cable station. They're all true, Holden. Didn't you know? I am the queen of suburban legend. They're kind of like wrestling promos, Fesh.
I'm sitting here already trying to get into it. I'm trying to find it. Oh, man.
Make your own choices, but I don't know. Maybe channel Eddie Kingston?
You are reading my mind.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see.
Eddie Kingston's a wrestler, Angela. He's pretty cool. You like
him? I figured it out from the context, actually.
Oh, okay.
Whew, okay. Okay. Yeah, Holden, it's true. In fact, everything you've heard about me is true. Everything you dug up on me is true. It's probably true. Yeah, I took two guys at once. You want to hear some gems you haven't unearthed? I took a 26-year-old guy to my senior prom and left halfway through to have sex with him and Gwen Turner in the backseat of a limo. Oh, and how about in college when, what's his name, Shannon Hamilton videotaped us having sex only to find the next day he broadcast it on the campus cable station. They're all true, Holden. Didn't you know? I'm the queen of suburban legend. I'm not an actor.
Great job, though, Fesh. Hey. I like your point. I love it.
There's no good way to say I am the queen of suburban legend.
And I think she does the best you can in the movie because she is saying it with like a little bit of a tossed off, like, yeah, that's what you're calling me, huh?
Like, yeah. It's almost like her trying to like throw in a joke to own it, you know, and like be like, I'm not, you know, or because she is opening up and getting angry or vulnerable, you know, and like it's her being like, you know, it's like a defensive almost touch. Yeah. But then I do like how that she, it's, I don't want to, I could, you know, her point is just like, hey, like these are all my decisions and my actions and whether they're good or bad, they're mine and I don't need to apologize for it or, you know, whatever, you know, yeah, some of them maybe I do regret, but they're things, they're mine, you know, this is nothing to do with, yeah.
The idea that you're again, your lived experience isn't like, I'm talking to you as a person. This is not a job interview. This is not a resume. Like, these are just things that happen. And that's a point that she hits multiple times in the movies. Like, and I'm here with you in that it doesn't matter. I don't want for that. So why does it matter? And I think, is it Banky who makes the point? Probably not. Somebody makes the point, though, of like, I think maybe Jay. It's like, well, that's good then because that means she's done it and still wants you. She's not going to, you know, like.
Yeah, he does say that. He's like, she knows what's out there. She's making an informed decision.
Yeah.
Ooh, going back to what you were saying about when she was in the rain scene, talking about how nothing would change for Holden, but her whole life and idea of herself would change. We actually do see it confirmed when her friend gets mad at her.
Yes.
Another one bites the dust. Mean, but it's true. But she did. It sounds like she also told them that she was a gold star lesbian and that was never true. I don't know. But if she, I don't.
Yeah.
Know.
But that I don't know, that kind of speaks to the notion of like, all right, I got to get it from all sides then, I guess. I can't just be a person. I have to have signed up and stuck with. She says something about being an experimental person. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, that's how you find yourself is through experimenting in ways. And so, I don't know. I do think I would say the most reductive representation in this is from the lesbian community and like how they're all pretty, what's the word? I don't know. Just like sharp and just mean and don't want to understand anything but what they already have in, you know, like when she's at the end with her new girlfriend, she's arms crossed, negative, hates comic books. And it's like, they were having fun stuff in the orders when they did, but as soon as it turned to be about anything else, they reverted back to this. And I think it's just, Kevin isn't equipped to write the dialogue of two women talking to each other, even if it is about a man.
With some sort of negative score on the Bechdel test.
Yes.
I also just guess it worked. Well, what's up, Angel?
Oh, and a lot of butch lady hate from Hooper, too. It's like, most lesbians look like you, Holden. Like, as if they should be shot for wearing a long sleeve shirt over a short sleeve shirt and giant pants, as was the custom at that time.
Well, now, who do you guys think would get a $100 bill first? Santa Claus, Easter Bunny, or that scene is a long walk for not so good of a drink at the end, or whatever the phrase is.
He also took like the drawing took more than 30 seconds. Holden was sitting there watching him put shading on the Easter Bunny patiently.
It's also just like, yeah, thank you. I know where you're going with it. I don't need four illustrations. Yeah. I get your point. All right. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. It's fine. That reminds me of an intro I wanted to do, but we got derailed with baby talk. when I wanted to introduce myself as I'm the inker to his artist.
Oh, fuck.
I blew it.
Oh, that was some really bizarre inside baseball from people who don't know about that kind of thing.
Yeah, boy, is it.
And that's another thing I've been hitting a lot on this podcast here is it's such a time capsule to be like, this was like the only piece of pop culture outside of comic books to reference anything within comic books. And I don't just mean the inside baseball, but like superheroes in general weren't talked about further than Superman and Batman. Like, so to get mm-hmm. into that minutia is him being like, this is my movie. I get to choose to do this. I think it's the only reason, like, you know, people like to make their characters in show business because they don't know anything else. And him having made a movie called Clerks, he already did that. So, like, what else can I do? Can I make them Clerks again? No. All right. What about Mallrats? Oh, okay. All right. Comic book artist. There you go.
What would the next one be? Like, professional son. I have
Phil son. Yeah. I mean, we eventually get Jersey Girl. Like, he doesn't go far beyond his lived experience. And, you know, not that he should necessarily. Again, I don't think he would argue that he's equipped to, but.
No, it does give it a nice local color. The vehemence with which people talked about being a colorist was very shocking. I was looking into a world I didn't understand.
Now, I got to ask, how do we feel about Holden? We've referenced it. He shows up a year later. Bluntman and Chronic is no more. Banky has his own comics now, and then Alyssa is on a panel, and then Holden shows up and confronts her, but, you know, says hi. I guess he does confront her, though, kind of, right?
Yeah. I have no problem with it conceptually as a coda denouement, just like they should tie up the movie, but how it is feels very... And then I showed her by maturity.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, no, you didn't then, because you wanted to show her. Like,
exactly. I think this is the thing. I think as a child. Oh, sorry, Angela.
No, go ahead.
As a child, like 13-year-olds, like, hell yeah. Oh, my God. This is so beautiful. He's changed. And she, like, regrets it because he's like, so, look how smart and wise he is now. But now I was just like watching, like, this is your own journey for you, and it's none of her business, and you don't need to shove this in her face, or you can do it. And the answer is always, cool, man, I don't care. You know, like, I've moved on, and oh, good for the best you get is, hey, I don't really care, but good for you and whatever. Bye. You know?
Yeah. It's an odd choice to be like, and then I showed up at work while she was on the clock, and I showed her the story I wrote about her that used her real name.
Yes, yeah, that's a part of it too. Just like, and I don't hold her actions against her. It's like, oh, that up. What actions? And just like, oh, so you publicly listed everything I've. Oh, you.
Yeah, had you not Aaron. Done the Alyssa thing at the end, if it was just called Chasing Amy and the character was just Amy and they left it at that, or it was like to my Amy or whatever, still not great, but like just a little bit removed. But it explicitly says at the end, doesn't it? I forgot about that. That sucks. Now, what I do like is the scene with him that earlier in that same scene, him and Banky just look at each other for a really long time, and it's like a nod. And then a thumbs up, and then just more staring at each other while Ethan Suplee is just ranting about comic books. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny.
Ethan Suplee was my MVP for this. Like, very, very hard. There was no call for him to put in as much work as he did. But he did it. And then wasn't he Jason Lee's brother on My Name is Earl?
He was.
Yes.
World's colliding.
They must have met on the set of Mallrats.
Put it in the mystery file.
Oh, Okay, logging this away. August.
Also, I was just independent of this movie a few nights ago, just thinking about the trope that I don't think it's talked about all that often. People don't look up in movies in the way that you do in life. You hear a sound, you look up. In movies, they hear a sound, they go, "I'm hearing something," and then they slowly look up at the thing. He throws the comic on her desk. And I know she's at a signing, so it is like, whatever, next. But she's asking him full-on questions about the things she's looking at. And yeah, still yeah. just staring down until eventually she needs to look up. And I don't know. Guys, look out for it in your next movie you watch. See how long it takes somebody to look up.
Wait. Hold the phone. Stop the presses. I was wrong. Brecken Meyer is not who Miramax wanted to put in this movie.
Who is it?
They wanted David Schwimmer, baby.
Oh, my God. That would have changed the vibe a lot.
Yeah.
I have to imagine David Schwimmer would be Ben Affleck then.
Ben Affleck, yeah.
And John Stewart. And then John Stewart would be like the snarky, shitty friend. Banky,
makes sense,
you know?
To me.
Ooh. Oh, I imagine.
It's a much different movie, but.
I imagined it opposite immediately. Huh. Well, what
this also apparently was Quentin Tarantino's favorite film of 1997.
I read that.
That tracks. You talk about just a dialogue that's a little fatty. Quentin talking about riffing on pop culture. That makes sense.
Well, and he's not going to give it to Boogie Nights because,
Oh,
There's competitiveness where he's like,
You didn't like Titanic, huh? Quentin, what's wrong? You didn't like Titanic?
Look, Titanic actually does hold up. I've seen it as an adult, and it's excellent.
I went and saw it. They re-released it in IMAX in February last year. Cried a lot. It was wonderful. Great movie.
It doesn't cover nuances as specifically as Chasing Amy does, but it might be a little more feminist.
There you go.
I don't know.
You just kind of summed up the difference between the two directors. James Cameron is more feminist and less, nuanced, but still in a way that doesn't feel abrasive. You just have to get on his level to be like, all right, this is the sense of humor. This is the sense of dialogue here where Kevin gets caught up. He trips over his own shoelaces trying so hard to be nuanced. And
I think it's the difference between this 40-minute line we all just read and I'm going straight ahead.
What is my favorite line in Titanic? The older Rose says it every woman's heart is an ocean of mystery or something.
Oh, that sucks, really? I think my all-time favorite is, "You gonna cut her meat for two, Cal?"
Oh, hey.
Kevin Smith's Titanic is, somebody put it into an AI filter. All right, let's do it. I want to see it.
Oh. Wow. I want to see it too, actually. That would be.
Wes Anderson's Mallrats could be pretty good.
Let's see. Now, I think it's about time. I think wrap it up. Any final thoughts on Chasing Amy we want to share? Or
I liked the Chibo Motto poster at the lesbian club. That gave a real sense of time and place.
Oh, how do we feel about her song?
She wrote that.
I kind of like it. Yes, I just learned that. I just saw that fact. I thought it was an obscure song or something.
Yeah.
That's cool.
They mentioned Debbie Gibson, so I just assumed it was a Debbie Gibson song.
Yes.
Well, that was shout outs to her. That's great.
And then the woman Kim that Alyssa makes out with was Jason Lee's first wife.
Wow.
Not Pilot Inspector's mother.
No, although I just got blasted with that fact again today and I had to lay down. I mean, Pilot Inspector.
This is an important question, Angela. Do you think Jason Lee is cool?
Objectively, yes.
Yeah, not every decision, everything he's ever done, you know.
Yeah. I mean, he's like, he was a professional skateboarder. Like, you
mm-hmm.
you get automatic.
It's hard to argue.
Cool. Yeah. For that, right?
Yeah.
And he quit Scientology.
That's oh, he a big did? One for me. Yeah.
That's a cool
was
move.
Was he like born a Scientologist? Did he come in and then leave?
No, he
I don't know. I think he was the Hollywood machine. Yeah.
Left.
Giovanni Ravisi, though, still plugging away.
Well, that's a family
poor guy
thing.
Yeah, yeah. What about Beck? Is Beck still?
Yeah, his dad is one too, and his grandpa maybe.
Hey,
I met a guy who escaped Scientology. He was like in his 40s. He had to get divorced because of it, because like his wife didn't want to. It's a whole thing.
Wow, how's he doing?
Hard to say. I haven't seen him in a while.
I was going to say, oh, we'll have to check up with him on our Dogma episode when he's on. He's our guest.
It's going to take me a couple days to remember his name, and then I'll send a text, and then it'll take me another couple days to see if he responds.
Well, let us know how he's
doing. Folks, I will keep you posted on this guy I met, this 40-year-old guy I met a year and a half ago.
That's what friendship is now, okay?
Mm-hmm.
True. Well, darn tootin'. I think that's all of our final thoughts on 1997 Motion Picture Chasing Amy.
Yes.
Real showcase for Ben Affleck's 90s goatee.
What a year he had. He had Chasing Amy and then Good Will Hunting.
Chasing Amy first?
That's right. I think.
Wow. Matt Damon is also in this movie with Brian O'Halloran. They're the execs.
I saw
and
that.
One tiny detail I really like. They say Snoochie Boochies to them. Damon gets it right. Brian O'Halloran says Snoochie Booches. Really funny. I think that's a conscious choice because he's a big wig who doesn't get it.
Yeah.
That's funny.
He like did the research an hour before.
Yeah.
Like, I got this. I know how to talk to these guys. Now, do we want to do a box office game, Fesh?
Oh, sure.
Okay. So this is April 4th, 1997. Ooh, what a month. Ooh, what a weekend. Oh boy, strap in. Number one's an easy. You'll get number one. The next couple. There's going to be some guessing. Angela, what this is a game we came up with. Fesh is a comprehensive knowledge and memory of the box offices. He grew up studying them with his father. And so I quiz him, and he almost always gets it right. It's pretty amazing. His sense memory for these things is incredible.
Cool.
Now, just off the record here, I used to full-blown cheat when we played this game. I would just have a tab up. I don't do that anymore. This is real now.
That's right. We do this for real now, folks.
Okay.
Number one. Mm-hmm. Third week of the box office. Still number one. Taking in $18 million. It's a big studio comedy starring a giant comedy actor.
Is it Liar Liar?
Ding, ding. Liar Liar. Wow. Oh. Number two. It took in $16 million.
Okay. What week?
This is week number one opening.
Oh, it's opening
okay.
Number two.
It is a sci-fi movie starring.
Awesome.
An
I love
actor.
When a hit has a question mark.
Yeah. Yeah. Action, adventure, romance, starring, sci-fi thriller. Starring a Batman.
Mm.
One of the Batmans.
Mm. Hmm.
Do you want to? Yeah, you want a log line?
If you have a guess, Angela, please.
Oh, now I think I put up my hand too soon.
You can eat. We're working. You know.
Okay.
We're,
is yeah. it? Is it some? No, wait. I was gonna guess that George Clooney starred in some sort of sci-fi. adjacent something.
But I not think George Clooney.
Not George Clooney.
I have a guess.
Yes.
Multiplicity?
No. Good guess.
Thanks.
This Batman was only Batman once.
So it's Val Kilmer.
That's right.
So
Simon Templar, a thief for hire, whose
Phantom?
Latest job to steal...
Not
no.
the Phantom. I'm sorry. No, not the Phantom. It's something like that, though, right?
The Saint.
The Saint. Fah.
Yes. Close enough.
Never would have gotten that.
He tries to steal the secret process for cold fusion, but this puts him at odds with a traitor bent on toppling the Russian government, as well as the woman who holds its secret.
Phantom is Billy Zane. Saint is Val Kilmer. I cannot believe I did that.
Men will literally try to stop a traitor and a woman who holds a secret for the Russian government instead of going to therapy. Am I right? number three. Second week, it's a Sony Pictures Entertainment release. Took in $7 million. Dropped 50% at the box office. Oof. Okay, we got... Oh, hey, there's a young man, there's an old man. What a duo.
Old man. So is that a comedy? Usually you don't see an old man and a young man unless I'm supposed to be laughing.
Never. This is an action crime drama thriller.
Action crime drama. Mm.
A police officer uncovers the real identity of his house guest, an IRA terrorist in hiding.
Huh. It's probably obvious, and I should probably know it, but it's nothing springing to mind. Can I get somewhere on the stars?
Yes, one of them was in a Star. He was in the Star Wars.
So Harrison Ford.
Yes, and the other one, why he is so hot, and my mom has a big crush on him, and he's recently been divorced, and he's, you know, Brad Pitt. It's Brad Pitt.
Oh, okay.
That was the movie where everyone made fun of his accent, but it was actually pretty accurate in reality.
The Devil's Own. He did an Irish accent? Wow. There.
Just a blind spot. Just don't know that movie.
Okay. You're definitely going to know this one. Oh, why? It's got a three-word title.
Okay.
It's a comedy romance. Fesh, you love
She's
comedy
all
romances.
That. No. It's too old for that. It's 98.
A bride's divorced parents find that their old feelings for each other during their wedding reception and over the course of the next few days upsetting the newlyweds' honeymoon.
Huh. Sounds great.
Yeah, it sounds fun. Starring another one of my mom's favorite actors, a woman in this case.
Okay. Hmm.
She sings and dances and acts. What can't she do?
What can't she do? Three-word title, you say. Is it based off of an old Motown hit?
It must be. I also may have said two of those words in the log line.
Okay.
It's That Old Feeling, starring Bette Midler and Dennis Farina? Farina, Dennis Farina. Yeah.
Sounds great.
What a match.
I'd love to see them two reconnect, huh? You know what I mean?
JCT's starting a fire with how much he's rubbing his palms together at the thought of it.
As soon as this podcast's over, I'm going to go rent That Old Feeling. Okay.
And number five.
Number five. Holy fucking shit. This looks like my shit. Oh, it's another Sony Pictures Entertainment. Taking in $5 million. Starring... two, like, legitimate lunatics.
Okay.
One, an athlete turned actor. The other, a combat sports athlete
turned
actor.
Double
team with Dennis Rodman and Jean-Claude Van Damme. Yes, that's right. An international spy teams up with an arms dealer to escape from a penal colony and rescue his family from a terrorist.
I got the bookends. I'm proud of myself. In that movie, Dennis Rodman's parachute is designed to look like a basketball.
Cool.
Pretty good.
Very cool. All right. Well, folks, this has been our podcast. Angela, thank you for being our guest.
Thanks for having me.
Is there anything you'd like to promote? or just talk about.
No, I'm afraid
it doesn't.
I'm...
It can be like it can be a concept, like such as you want to promote free love, anger, aggression.
I would like to promote goatee awareness.
Okay.
We can't address this problem until we're aware that it exists.
Very true.
You
very
do
true.
Find yourself affected by goatees. Make sure that it's not long and fluffy like Ben Affleck's in Chasing Amy.
Well said.
It's brought to you by the American Society for Goatee Management.
Thank you. Thank you all. Join us next week, folks, where Dogma?
I believe it's Dogma.
It's Dogma.
Snoochie Booches.
Snoochie Booches.